expanding vaccine eligibility, the pandemic in Latin America, and spring break on Fort Lauderdale Beach. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. More people are eligible to get a COVID-19 vaccine this week, including people as young as 18 years old with certain medical conditions. So what are the changing rules? What questions do you have about getting vaccinated? Call us now, 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. The pandemic continues raging in Latin America with long lines for the vaccine without much supply across the continent.
The elderly people over 80 making huge lines in Bogota with the cold weather, raining, waiting in the street for the vaccine.
It's all ahead on our program made possible by Willie the Bee Man, bee removal specialist. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening this week and supporting public radio. This was the week that a lot more younger people could begin getting vaccinated against COVID-19 in Florida. Teachers, school workers, people working in daycare centers can now get their dose or doses at some vaccination sites, including pharmacies. Wendy Peel is a seventh grade teacher in Weston. She's 63 years old and has an appointment to be vaccinated now on Sunday.
I was so excited when I heard that everyone could get it, no matter how old they were. And we were emailing each other all day with all the great places that we could go, the CVS here and the CVS there, and we all made our appointments for our vaccines.
Even people as young as 18 years old are eligible at some locations in South Florida if they have certain underlying conditions. With these eligibility rules changing fast and vaccinations increasing in South Florida, who can now roll up their sleeves? And where? How do you get in line? 800-743-9576. Where are you in the line of people who want to be vaccinated? 800-743-WLRN is our telephone number to share your story live on this Friday afternoon. We're also on social media. You can hit us up there at WLRN on Twitter. Dr. Aldo Calvo is with us, Medical Director of Ambulatory Services at Broward Health. Dr. Calvo, welcome to the South Florida Roundup. Who's eligible to be vaccinated at Broward Health?
Well, thank you. Appreciate the invitation. Yeah, we're excited to now enter this new phase of expanding age limitations and those who can come for their COVID-19 vaccine. So with the initial governor's executive order, we had those 65 years in age and older. Mm-hmm. EMS personnel, and any healthcare staff, including dentists, speech pathologists, pharmacists who could not get access from their centers for immunizations. But now we've expanded to include sworn police officers 50 years of age and older, firefighters 50 years of age and older, and also those teachers and staff at schools 50 years of age and older, in addition to anyone less than 65 years of age who have at least one underlying medical condition per the CDC guidelines. And that could be anything similar to diabetes or hypertension, cancer, pregnancy, Down syndrome, just to name a few.
Yeah, so let me put that in another way to make sure I have it correct here, doctor, is that anybody 18 or older with one of the CDC required underlying conditions is eligible for a vaccination at Broward Health. Is that correct?
That is correct. We are vaccinating approximately 1,500 members of our community every day, Monday through Friday, I should say, at one of three locations. And anyone 18 to and above with these underlying medical conditions can easily go onto our website. Yep. And they can attest to one of these conditions. And they can, if they have multiple ones, they can attest to those. And then some of our, from our centralized access center, will contact the patient to schedule them.
Yeah, the underlying conditions, I'm looking at them now on the website, type 1, type 2 diabetes, sickle cell disease, hypertension, Down syndrome, chronic kidney disease, COPD, just to name a few of them. With this expansion of Broward Health to 18 and above with these underlying conditions, this is much further than the universe that the governor's executive order has talked about, which you referred to earlier, 65 plus, 50 and over for teachers, law enforcement, and firefighters. Why make this exception, I suppose, at Broward Health that goes beyond the governor's own executive order?
Well, you know, as a healthcare system and healthcare professionals, we want to get to herd immunity as quickly as possible. And it is a combination of allocation of vaccines and partnerships that we have with the city of Fort Lauderdale and the Inter Miami here at Lockhart Stadium, where we're able to increase capacity. And we also know that there are many people who are less than 65 years of age who have these chronic conditions, per the CDC, who are also at risk and are also being hospitalized. We know from the data that a lot of the people who've been ravaged by COVID-19 with hospitalizations, ICU admissions, intubations, and unfortunately death, not only are they 65 years of age or older, but they're also individuals who have these chronic conditions, many of which come from minority communities, mm-hmm. who are Hispanics and Blacks. And we want to make sure that we partner with our community members to make sure that they have the access and ease to get online and get this vaccine for them, not only to protect them, but also to protect their immediate circle, from their family, neighbors. Again, this is just our way of expanding and partnering with our community and making sure that everyone at risk gets their shot at this shot of hope.
Dr. Calvo, the supply of vaccine that Broward Health is using to this expanded universe of people now eligible at Broward Health for the vaccine, is that supply coming through the state?
Yeah, we have relationships with the state, of course, and with the county. So we're getting our supply through the state right now. But also we work with the county and making sure that we get the allocations, and we're reporting the data as well for
right.
them as well.
Have
right
you faced,
now we have
Sorry, doctor. Have you faced any kind of criticism privately, given that Broward Health is a bit of an outlier in terms of who's eligible for the state supply of vaccines?
No, we haven't, but what we can say is that I think we all agree that we want everyone to receive this vaccine. We want to get to herd immunity as quickly as possible. We know the government has stated that there should be enough vaccines by May for everyone who wants mm-hmm. a vaccine. So we're not too far from there. And we know that there's been a lot of frustration from the community with regard to the inability to get access, particularly those individuals who suffer from these medically underlying conditions that put them at risk for severe illness if infected with COVID-19. So what we're doing is basically, again, just partnering, you know, whether the governor's going to get there soon or the healthcare system, all our job is providing vaccines and getting patients safe and getting back to normalcy. So that's what we're about, and that's what we'll continue to do.
Dr. Calvo, stick with us. Dr. Aldo Calvo, Medical Director of Ambulatory Services at Broward Health, is with us here on the South Florida Roundup. Sarah Francis is also with us, the Assistant Director of Pharmacy Services at Jackson Memorial Hospital. Sarah, thanks for your time today. Who's eligible to be vaccinated at Jackson these days?
First, thank you for having me. Mm-hmm. So earlier this week, following Governor DeSantis's executive order, Jackson expanded our eligibility criteria. First, we are continuing to vaccinate our elderly population over the age of 65 at our Jackson facilities, but our new expanded criteria allows Florida residents age 50 to 64 who are school employees, sworn law enforcement officers, and firefighters to be vaccinated at our Jackson facilities. In addition, Florida residents in the same 50 to 64 age group of assigned doctor's note that lists the condition they're being treated for, recommendation for a vaccine, and the physician's signature.
So those rules at Jackson sound to me, Sarah, that those follow the governor's executive order. Those were the new kind of eligibility categories that the governor announced about a week ago. Is there any consideration at Jackson to follow the lead of Broward Health, for instance, and push that age eligibility down to as low as 18 with certain underlying CDC required conditions?
Yes, Jackson is always looking for increased opportunity to vaccinate our population. First, we want to make sure that we're getting to our most vulnerable population first, and our first line, you know, employees that have high risk of contracting the virus. So that's why we decided to first go with that 50 to 64 right. and are continually evaluating when we have the opportunity to expand that.
Yeah, we should note that Jackson made that announcement pushing that eligibility age down to 50 prior to the governor making that announcement. But are there discussions that would push that age eligibility as young as 18, similar to what Broward Health has done with the underlying conditions?
There are discussions, but nothing as of right now. First, okay. We want to make sure that we are meeting the needs of that 50 to 65 medically vulnerable population.
We've got a couple of medical professionals with us here live on this Friday afternoon on the South Florida Roundup, taking your phone calls about vaccines. Eligibility rules have changed considerably in the last week. Sarah Francis is the Assistant Director of Pharmacy Services at Jackson Health. Dr. Aldo Calvo is Medical Director of Ambulatory Services at Broward Health. 800-743-WLRN, our phone number, 800-743-9576. You can also send us a note on Twitter at WLRN. Frank in Boca Raton has been patient. Go ahead, Frank. You're on the radio.
Well, howdy. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm still not clear about one thing, and that is how is schools defined? The reason I'm asking is I work at FAU, which is obviously a school, and I'm staffed there. But when hearing these discussions, I've always been under the impression it was elementary school, high school, that sort of thing. I didn't know if it extended to places like FAU.
Great question. Frank in Boca Raton, you are closest to Broward Health. So, Dr. Calvo, I'm going to punt this question to you. When talking about teachers, to be specific, is it K-12 teachers? Is it anybody who's involved in the instructional materials or curriculum of education, be it either K-12, private, public, higher education?
Yeah, so thank you for the question. So following the governor's executive order, it is K-12. And not just teachers, but also staff who work at the school system. Now, with your situation, being at FAU or any other community college or private institution of higher learning, that's why I think we expanded our capacity for 18 through 64 or with any underlying medical condition. We know that there are certain individuals who may have hypertension or diabetes, even being a BMI of 25, which is delegated as overweight or that greater than 30, obese, would be eligible to receive a vaccine through the Broward Health system. So this is a fluid movement. Things change quickly. They have over the past 2 weeks, and I anticipate that over the next couple of weeks, we'll probably even look at pivot and expand even more so as we are assured of allotment of vaccines. And again, we find out more or less how many individuals are making appointments and how many are keeping those appointments as well. So we monitor all of these things, and those come into the decision as to whether we expand the criteria or not. The capacity, the relationships that we have, in this case with the city of Fort Lauderdale and the Miami Inter, and of course, the amount of people who are keeping their appointments and actually getting vaccinated.
Dr. Calvo, I need to correct myself and answer a critique on Twitter. I referred to Broward Health and its 18 plus with the underlying conditions as an outlier. That is not correct. It's not necessarily an outlier. Broward Memorial also has the same criteria. I'm looking at its website right now. Active adult Memorial patients between the ages of 18 and 64 who are Florida residents or seasonal residents and meet the CDC criteria with the underlying conditions are also eligible at the Memorial healthcare system as well. So I apologize, and I thank the listener for the tweet for that correction. We also got an email in regarding lifeguards, whether or not a lifeguard is eligible for the vaccine. Sarah Francis at Jackson Memorial, what can you help out our lifeguarding community?
So currently, lifeguards are not included in our sworn law enforcement officers and firefighters. However, those individuals, lifeguards included, who are 50 and above, that meet those high-risk criteria with a signed doctor's note may be eligible to get vaccinated at the moment.
The signed doctor's note is a requirement for some of those patients, Sarah. If folks don't have a primary care physician or otherwise maybe are kind of outside the traditional healthcare infrastructure, how to go about securing that kind of documentation?
That's a great question. So the signed doctor's note is the current way of that Jackson's able to validate that they meet the high-risk criteria. If you're within a healthcare system, then you can reach out to resources there. For example, we have some patients at our Jackson facilities who may not have a PCP but still follow within our healthcare system that may be able to get the vaccine through that means.
Let's talk a little bit about supplies. Dr. Calvo, you mentioned supplies being one of the metrics focused on in terms of eligibility. What can you share with us about the number of doses Broward Health is expecting in the next week?
Yeah, we currently have a capacity of about 30,000 vaccines for Pfizer at this time. And we will continue to use the Pfizer at our three sites, whether they're located at the stadium here at Lockhart Park, Broward Health North, or Broward Health Medical Center. And we continue to have these conversations with the state involving our pharmacy department, our leadership, to make sure that we have replenishment. We currently are using Pfizer and Moderna. We have not begun to use the Janssen vaccine at this time. I also would like to say one thing with regard to how patients who are 18 to 64 can come onto our website. We are not requiring a physician's note, and I think it's just really an important call out. It was, we understand that healthcare inequities exist in our country, whether they be local here in South Florida or throughout the nation. And we really need to do a better job in making sure that we do a better job of reducing barriers to care and access to timely vaccines. So we understand that those individuals, again, who have been ravaged by COVID-19, particularly those who come from minority populations, Hispanics and Blacks of any age, those, again, who have been hospitalized or had death from this, but we need to do better. So that's why all what we are requesting is, if you go onto our online, our website, we just ask for an attestation. And the attestation is to incorporate exactly what underlying medical condition or conditions you have, and then that will assure you from getting schedule for an appointment for vaccination.
So
it is under the honor system?
Right. I was just going to describe it as that, doctor, the honor system. You're not requiring any documentation, for instance, of somebody suffering from cancer or asthma.
Those of us on the phone here have been, I've had good fortune, most likely, in having good access to medical care, a physician, a nurse practitioner that we can go to. But someone like myself, who's a healthcare professional who does this day in and day out for the past 20 years, who works at a site within Broward Health with community health services and sees healthcare disparities every day. Yeah. We understand that not everyone has that ability. So that 70-year-old Hispanic or African-American in Fort Lauderdale who doesn't have regular longitudinal care, who cannot go or even transportation to go to a physician's office or the mode of payment of that, or is uninsured or underinsured, we don't want that to be a barrier. So that's why we internally decided that the best way moving forward to partner with our community would be to do an online attestation.
Well, and forgive me for this question sounding cynical, but one of the underlying conditions listed by the CDC is smoking. What is to stop somebody from attesting that they're a smoker when they're not?
Or any of the other conditions.
Sure.
It's right.
Well, pregnancy may be a little more difficult to fake, but not smoking.
Correct. It could be any of them, and that's why it is on the honor system, and that's why we're asking them to attest to this. But we do know that if you have smoked, if you continue to smoke, or if you smoke most of your life and you stop, that certainly is an important risk factor for the development of cardiovascular disease, malignancy, COPD, and asthma, and will put you at increased risk for severe illness if you are infected with COVID-19. And that's why the CDC has also put it in there. It's not my call, it's the CDC.
Understood. Dr. Calvo, you mentioned the capacity of 30,000 doses at the Broward Health facilities, but how many doses are in inventory?
That's what we have currently, the ability to have to give approximately 30,000. And that number changes, so I'm just using that number right now. It could be a little bit less, it could be a little bit more, but that's the average ballpark that we have based on my last conversations with our department of pharmacy who manages that.
So in other words, that's how many doses, that's what's in inventory?
It's in inventory, and that's our doses.
Gotcha.
And that changes, of course, depending on the allotment that we get. Previous weeks, it was a lot less. We have a pretty ample amount at this time, and we're hoping to get more because, again, the bottom line is we want to vaccinate all those who meet the criteria and get to herd immunity, as we all do, as soon as possible.
Sarah,
Hopefully,
what about supplies at Jackson? What are those looking like?
we are fortunate enough that we have not had any supply interruptions since we started vaccinating our patients December 15th. To date, we've vaccinated over 100,000 patients and do have the capacity to vaccinate over 2,000 patients a day across our three sites, and have been able to do so since the beginning. So currently no concerns for supply, and we do guarantee that if you do receive your first dose of the vaccine at Jackson, that we have supply guaranteed for that second dose to complete the series as well.
Sarah and Dr. Calvo, some more phone calls here. We're going to go to Tamara. Kimberly is on line four. Kimberly, thanks for listening and calling. You're on the radio.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. I'm really excited to hear that the qualifications for being eligible have been extended, because my husband and I are both under the age limit and both have underlying conditions as outlined by the CDC. The problem is, I was actually wondering, how do I go about getting in line? I went to the website, and there's a big red banner that says that it's suspended. So I'm now wondering, like, what are the next steps for me to be able to take to get my husband and I in line to take the vaccine?
Great.
I'd also like to add, we're African American, and therefore in a population that is, you know, hard to get to anyway. So mm-hmm. Here are people who are actually looking to, who would like to be able to take the vaccine, but, you know, running against these roadblocks.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Kimberly, and adding your voice to this conversation. Dr. Calvo, any idea when appointments will be open up again?
Yeah, they were actually opened up this morning on the online, BrowardHealth.org. The landing page is right there for easy access. It probably is due to overwhelming demand. It comes down from time to time because we have schedulers who, although it's an army of schedulers, after we reach a certain capacity, we have to sundown it for a time being and then call those patients to schedule them. As you can imagine, due to this increase in age and underlying conditions and police officers, firefighters, there's more people who are now getting online. But the good news is that we will be opening it up again next week. It will be serial times that we'll do this from time to time. My suggestion, and I understand your frustration, because I'm an advocate for and have been for expanding the age criteria and using these medical underlying conditions. And I completely understand where you're coming from, and we want to partner with you, but keep checking back. That's all I can tell you. It will be open again next week, and it may be open multiple times in the morning. Check if you can in the afternoon and sometime in the evening. It's an easy URL link just to go on, www.broadhealth.org, and you'll be able to see it. It's right there on the landing page. And thanks for your patience.
Sarah, for Jackson Health, what's the status of the ability to make appointments for those that fit the Jackson eligibility?
Yes, so Jackson is opening up appointments on an ongoing basis on our website, jacksonhealth.org. We also release, when we have available appointments, we release that on our social media platforms, Twitter and Instagram, so that patients are made aware of when those appointments are being released. We do realize certain individuals may have barriers to using technology. So we have a community outreach partnership with over 100 houses of worship and nonprofit organizations, and have partnered with those houses of worship to be able to coordinate their eligible members to get vaccination at Jackson as well.
Okay.
And we also recommend reaching out to the county, because the county does have a pre-registration phone number that you can reach out to as well.
Right. The county, Miami-Dade County, in this case, where Jackson Health is located. Carmen in Fort Lauderdale, we're going to pop around to Broward County. Carmen, thanks for listening, and you're on the radio now.
Yes. Hi. Thank you for taking the question. I was just wondering, because I've spoken to a couple of healthcare professionals on the west coast of Florida, and they're telling me that a lot of their colleagues are not taking the vaccine. For whatever reason, I don't know, they've seen an adverse effect or something or other. And I was just wondering about that, how many healthcare professionals are not taking the vaccine. And I find that, you know, very interesting and curious to look into why that. Have you heard that? Or
yeah.
That's what I'm hearing.
Carmen, I appreciate the question. Sarah Francis with Jackson Memorial Hospital, I know many weeks ago, as vaccinations were just beginning to ramp up, there was an internal survey of Jackson, of both Jackson professionals as well as associates around the Jackson Health System about their interest in taking the vaccine. What have you experienced personally or with your peers that you could share with us?
Yes, yeah, so personally, there was an overwhelmingly positive response here at the Jackson Health System. We have been dealing with this on the front lines since March of last year. So as soon as vaccines became available, it was a very positive response, and many of my colleagues were very interested. I know that over several thousand Jackson employees got vaccinated, and more than half expressed interest in getting vaccines. And even those who initially may, you know, have been on the fence have gotten vaccinated by now, because we have been vaccinating employees since mid-December.
Dr. Calvo, a couple of questions on social media, and I know Jerry in West Palm Beach, we're just not going to have time to get to your phone call, but they want to ask about residency requirements for Broward North. If someone does not live in Broward County, are they still eligible to sign up for a vaccine through Broward Health and the expanded eligibility?
Absolutely. You just have to be from residents in the state of Florida per the governor's executive order. And that's all you really need to get a vaccination at our three sites.
Dr. Aldo Calvo is the medical director of ambulatory services at Broward Health, and Sarah Francis, assistant director of pharmacy services at Jackson Memorial Hospital. Dr. Calvo and Sarah, thanks so much for your time and sharing your expertise with our listeners.
Thank you so much for having us.
We've got more to come here on this edition of the South Florida Roundup. We're still going to continue to talk about the pandemic, looking at the COVID-19 crisis that is getting worse in Latin America. That's next. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. The daily positivity rate of COVID-19 in South Florida has fallen considerably since the beginning of the year, but it is rising in Brazil. That country has reported the third most cases in the world, behind the United States and India, according to data from Johns Hopkins University. And this week, Brazil experienced some of the deadliest days yet of the pandemic. Hospital ICUs in Brazil are over 80% across much of the country. Worldwide, 5 of the top 15 countries with the highest death toll from the virus are in Latin America. The continent is in crisis. Do you have a family member, friends in Brazil, Colombia, Peru, Ecuador, Chile? What's being done to address the surge? What about the new variants of the virus? 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Your phone calls about COVID-19 in Latin America in a moment. I spoke with Dr. Carlos Espinal. He's director of FIU's Global Health Consortium. Doctor, thanks for your time today here on WLRN. Describe the state of the pandemic as we're now entering the second year of it in South America.
Well, South America, or Latin America in general speaking, has been really in a bad situation in terms of the COVID-19 pandemic. Today, we have around 1.2 million deaths. It's one of the highest regions with cases in globally, no? Particularly the situation in Brazil, in Mexico, in Colombia, in Peru, in Panama in the beginning, and in Ecuador has been really very dramatic, despite all the political and health interventions and so on. It's one of the regions most affected by COVID-19. This is due basically because COVID-19 came to really to demonstrate our inequities in social economic development and very poor health infrastructure.
And we've seen the tragic consequences of that and continue to see it. This week alone, Brazil has seen some of its deadliest days of the pandemic. Now, as we're speaking, why has Brazil seen its daily death total jump in the last several days?
Brazil has been under a very conflictive situation with no political leadership. Even the president doesn't take seriously the pandemic, not even now. Not even now. He doesn't believe in the vaccines, for instance. As a consequence, there is no clear mandate of social distance, using a mask, and keeping the basic measures. And in addition to that, we today have this Brazilian variant, which is extremely, extremely transmissible and highly pathogenic.
In addition to seeing its death toll hit new daily records this week, it also has reported more daily cases than the United States, despite Brazil having only two-thirds of the population. Last fall, the medical journal The Lancet called COVID-19 in Latin America a humanitarian crisis. Even what we're experiencing in Brazil this week, has anything changed?
No, really, not much hasn't changed in Brazil.
What risk does the situation in Brazil specifically and more broadly in Latin America pose to South Florida?
We have the vaccines available. We have vaccines that work, that could really reduce the negative impact of COVID-19. But our rollout of the vaccination program, our mechanisms to purchase the vaccines and to receive the vaccines in the most needed countries and countries with low and middle income has been tremendously difficult. This is a great risk today, because with the Brazilian variants and also the UK variants that could arrive to the region at any moment, if we don't really increase the vaccination program to the level that is needed, there is a potential chance that the vaccines at the end of the road do not work and do not really protect the people and create that community immunity that we are expecting from the vaccine once we reach 75% of vaccination coverage. This is why the pressure to increase the vaccination program to facilitate the access to the vaccines and to reach very rapidly the 75% vaccination coverage of the population.
What kind of timeline is the continent operating under to reach those levels of vaccinated population?
The only country that is really performing well, and it's almost the third country in the world, is Chile, because of the really prompt response, the preparation, the access to the population, and this is the best example. In the other countries, the situation is really critical. For instance, you take the case of Colombia. Colombia is supposed to immunize during these first months at least almost 800,000 people, and we only have 190,000 today. The elderly people over 80 years old making huge lines in Bogota with the cold weather, raining, waiting in the street for the vaccine. Come on, there's no way we reach our target and the numbers that we need today. We continue with this strategy. So at this speed, we will take at least 2 years to really reach the goal. And perhaps this is going to be really, really late in terms of controlling the COVID-19 pandemic and its impact in the community.
What is next for the global response to COVID in Latin America? What are you watching for? What are you hoping for from the global public health community in terms of attacking this virus on the continent?
First, we need to find the mechanisms to have more vaccines available. Second, we are in the middle of discussion already that we need to become a little bit more independent of the big pharma and the rich countries in order to be able to produce our own vaccines. We learned nothing from the previous pandemic, including the flu pandemics. This is the price that we pay for the low investment in science, in developing and research and developing in vaccines and in medicines. The other critical situation is how are we going to improve or reduce the gaps in economic and social development and improve in health investment. Health investment in Latin America is really low compared to what is needed. Also, how to improve the health infrastructure. With more human resources and more technological tools to really face a critical situation as a potential present and future pandemics.
Dr. Carlos Espinal is the director of FIU's Global Health Consortium. Doctor, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you for your time and continue with this important news.
This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN, talking about COVID-19 in Latin America and the Caribbean. 800-743-WLRN. The state of the pandemic in the hemisphere is very much a local story for us here in South Florida. How is it affecting your family, your friends, colleagues, business, culture, the economy? 800-743-9576. What can you share with us from your experience and your questions? 800-743-WLRN. WLRN America's editor Tim Padgett is with us here on the Roundup. Tim, what has been the reaction in Latin America this week to this spike in infections and particularly the jump in deaths that we've seen in Brazil?
It's made the quest to get more vaccines into the region all the more urgent. I mean, as we've been reporting, Latin America, and as Dr. Espinal just pointed out, Latin America is severely behind, not just the United States, but much of the rest of the world when it comes to getting vaccines into countries like Brazil, Peru, the Caribbean. In fact, it's so bad there that COVAX, which is the international effort to get more vaccine access to poor countries, it's led in part by the World Health Organization. Mm-hmm. They told me a few weeks ago that Latin America is now their top priority in terms of getting vaccines into any region in the world.
Latin America, the top priority of that World Health Group. Brazil is seeing an increase and the variant now containing the Brazilian variant. The president of Brazil just this week at an event said, "Stop whining. How long are you going to keep crying about it?" referring to the pandemic. And he said, "We regret the deaths again, but we need a solution." So what has been President Bolsonaro's solution in Brazil?
There is none. In fact, the nonprofit Lowy Institute in Australia a few weeks ago released a survey of 100 countries around the world in terms of government COVID performance. Mm-hmm. Brazil came in dead last in terms of its response to this pandemic, even worse than the United States. Now, that said, the other significant fact here in that survey is that 7 of the worst 10 countries were in this hemisphere, were in the Americas, including the United States.
Last spring, you reported on how Ecuador was the epicenter of the pandemic in those early weeks in Latin America and how the country worked to address it in April and May. What's the state of the pandemic in Ecuador and what lessons could be applied from a year ago to the experience now?
Things have improved in Ecuador. As we've been saying, Brazil now is the epicenter, as yeah. well as countries like Peru. Mexico has become a big epicenter, unfortunately. It's the second biggest country in the region. And I think the lessons you can take from these countries that were hit very harshly early on is that, again, the same lessons that we've had to learn in the United States. You have got to make a more forceful attempt to enforce social distancing, mask wearing. And these are things that Ecuador just did not take seriously, particularly just, people on the street. And the big reason for that in Latin America, as we've reported in the past, is that it's harder to enforce those things there because you don't have the sort of economic and social safety nets in place. you know, a street vendor in Quito, Ecuador is not going to be able to rely on a pandemic relief check the way, you know, a laborer can here in the United States.
Just a final minute here, Tim, but I want to ask you about the Caribbean. The Centers for Disease Control has recommended against all travel to several Caribbean islands, Haiti, the DR, Puerto Rico, Jamaica included. What is the state of the pandemic in the Caribbean?
The pandemic itself isn't as severe as it is, say, in the rest of Latin America and the Caribbean. The problem is, particularly, for example, in Cuba, is the economic impact. And that's why you're hearing a rising chorus saying that richer countries like the United States and Europe have got to start doing more for regions, poorer regions like the Caribbean, to get them vaccines so that they can neutralize what pandemic they have, so that they can start bringing tourists back into the Caribbean to ameliorate this awful economic impact that islands like Cuba, the Dominican Republic, Jamaica, et cetera, have felt.
WLRN's America's editor, Tim Padgett, with us. Tim, always appreciate you sharing your reporting with us. Thanks.
Thanks, Tom.
We're going to talk about spring break next here on the South Florida Roundup. It is here in South Florida on the sand. How is Fort Lauderdale prepared? That's next. We're back on the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. Spring has sprung on the sand in South Florida. Spring break is here despite the pandemic, and so are the spring breakers. One measure, demand for hotels. For the last week in February, hotel occupancy in Miami Beach was down just 15% compared to a year earlier when the pandemic was just beginning.
We're policing a playground right now for other people.
This is Miami Beach Mayor Dan Gelber this week on WLRN's Sundial program.
We're trying to tell people that they can't come here to let loose.
Fort Lauderdale also is seeing spring breakers. Demand for hotels in Fort Lauderdale down only 13% compared to a year earlier. So what are the rules about wearing masks, social distancing? What if people or bars or restaurants are breaking the rules? With Florida open for business, sunny and warm, what is greeting spring breakers when they get here? 800-743-WLRN, our phone number, live on this Friday afternoon, 800-743-9576. Fort Lauderdale Police Interim Assistant Chief Frank Sousa is along with us now. Assistant Chief, welcome to the program. Thanks for your time, sir.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I am well. What do you expect on the beach this weekend in Fort Lauderdale?
Well, we've prepared for a regular spring break year. Obviously, dealing with everything the country has had to undergo the last year, we have taken our preparations as we would for any other year. And we have seen a pretty sizable spring break crowd thus far. We have increased our staffing as we do each year. We're obviously trying our best to encourage social distancing and mask wearing in order to avoid the spread of COVID.
Yeah. Tell me about that. How does that guidance to the officers in the morning meeting or the evening meeting before the shift when you're offering guidance? What does that mean when you're on the sand?
Well, listen, our officers have become accustomed to living in this COVID world. They understand the need to protect themselves because they all have families to go home to at the end of the day.
Yep.
And all we can do is educate and inform the public as we have been doing since the beginning of this pandemic. The issue of mask wearing is much larger than a law enforcement issue. We do work closely with our code compliance officers and other city departments to educate and inform these individuals. Our businesses have taken a targeted approach to do their best also to be part of the solution and not part of the problem.
I've seen banners, for instance, in pictures and video on streetlights that say, you know, that remind people social distancing 6 feet apart. What are the rules on the sand, Chief, that spring breakers and residents, for that matter, are expected at least to follow?
So we've set up some emergency lanes on the sand, and we do it on a daily basis to encourage the social distancing. We're not naive to the fact that there are groups of individuals that are still going to congregate and not take the safety precautions that they can do. Again, we are doing our best to educate and inform everyone to make them understand that the pandemic is still very much real. It has not gone away, despite the efforts to vaccinate individuals and the numbers starting to decrease. We still have to be vigilant and mindful that this pandemic is still here and very real.
Assistant Chief, you mentioned vaccines are here. I know within the last week or so, the governor has lowered the age restriction down to 50 years old for law enforcement officers. What's the talk amongst your colleagues in the Fort Lauderdale Police Department about vaccines?
Well, I think every officer that I've spoken to is eager to be vaccinated. Like the rest of the public, you know, police officers put themselves at danger every single day when they have to make contact with individuals. Unlike most professions, we don't have the choice to not go to a call and not make contact with individuals. So I think the officers are eager to protect themselves so that they can protect their families.
Yeah.
And they're definitely looking forward to everyone being able to get vaccinated.
Like many professions, hard for a police officer to protect and serve while working from home these days. And I appreciate that answer on the vaccine. I know we talked initially about spring break, and that's what we're going to continue to talk about here. The interim assistant chief in Fort Lauderdale, the police department, Frank Sousa, is with us. Also, the Broward County Mayor, Steve Geller, is back with us here on the roundup. Mayor Geller, always nice to have you. The county considered a curfew for 3 weeks during the height of spring break, but decided against it. Why?
I spoke with the hotel, restaurant, and bar industry, and they reasonably pointed out that there's a very small number of bars that we're expecting to have problems with, and the overwhelming majority of them are not going to be overrun by spring breakers. So they asked us if we could instead crack down on the bars that were not cooperating. Originally, a problem we had is that the city of Fort Lauderdale was not agreeing to enforce our orders to shut down non-compliant bars, but we reached a compromise with them. We would not do a curfew, and if the county issues a shutdown order, the city of Fort Lauderdale police will enforce it.
Assistant Chief Sousa, what were those conversations like?
I wasn't part of those conversations. I know that those were had with city and city legal. I can tell you that from the police department perspective, we've been following the legal advice of our city attorney, our police legal advisor, and that's coming directly through the governor's orders and the city manager.
And that legal advice has been what in terms of business establishments that are found to be violating certain public health protocols? What's that guidance been like, Chief?
We've sent code enforcement out there. Code enforcement has issued fines to certain businesses in the city. We've shut down certain businesses. I believe there was an example of that at the wharf where the capacity was over and they were told to be compliant. They were shut down and they have since come into compliance. So that's an example of action that was taken.
Mayor Geller, your neighbor to the south, Miami-Dade County, has a curfew in place. What do you think the effect of that may be on overnight crowds or just the impact in Broward County, if any?
Well, Miami has had a curfew for at least the last 6 or 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
Again, our legal opinion has been that we cannot keep a curfew in place for an extended period of time, that we can do one for a brief period of time, which is why we were going to do that. But as I said, I reached an agreement with the city manager of Fort Lauderdale, which we believe the curfew unnecessary. Candidly, I have written the governor. We would really like the ability to enforce mask mandates on individuals. We can't.
So, Mayor, just to be clear, when you talk about enforcement, you're asking for fines, I imagine. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Fines, actually, we do currently have the ability to arrest someone, not because of failing to wear a mask, but there have been a few examples of people that have gone into stores and when asked to leave because they weren't wearing masks,
right,
refused to, and they were then arrested for trespassing,
yeah,
not for not wearing the masks.
Yeah. Assistant Chief Sousa, what kind of force do you anticipate out on the beach this weekend in terms of the number of personnel?
Well, we never relay our total number of personnel for safety reasons, but we do have a sizable increase of what our normal allocations are on a daily basis for the beach. It'll be very evident that there are police officers everywhere.
Assistant Chief, you've been on the force since 1999. Here we are in 2021. You've experienced a lot of spring breaks here as it's just beginning. How would you compare this year so far to all those others that you've been with the force on?
So we definitely, obviously with the COVID coming on in the beginning of spring break last year, we saw a steep decline because the country was shut down. We have definitely seen a return to regular crowd sizes here. larger than anticipated because we really didn't know what to anticipate. Hmm. But like I stated a few moments ago, that's why we went ahead and staffed a normal spring break year.
Yeah, prepared for a normal spring break year and a very abnormal year. Fort Lauderdale Interim Assistant Police Chief Frank Sousa. Assistant Chief, thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much. You guys have a great day.
You as well. Steve Geller is the mayor of Broward County. Always a pleasure to have you on, Your Honor. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That is the South Florida Roundup this week here on WLRN. It is produced by Denise Royal with help from Andrea Perdomo. Our engagement editor is Katie Lepre. Lance Dixon is our digital editor. Our news director is Terrence Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman is our editorial director. The director of radio programming at WLRN is Jason Sabka. Radio operations is directed by Peter J. Mayers. He also is the guy behind the buttons. He helps and is our technical supervisor. Richard Ives answers the phones. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tweeting. And above all, thanks for supporting WLRN. Our program is made possible by Willie the Bee Man, Bee Removal Specialist.